Speaker, I beg to move that this House do now adjourn.
The question is that this House do now adjourn. Mr. Bernie Grant.
Thank you very much, Madam Deputy Speaker. And can I say I'm pleased that my subject was chosen. This is a subject that has stirred quite a lot of debate amongst sections of the community, particularly amongst black and minority ethnic people. And I think that it is time that the House heard and understood what is being said. And I welcome the opportunity of putting my case for the resettlement of people in the Caribbean to this House. Madam Deputy Speaker, in principle, there is nothing new about the British government providing financial assistance to people, including British citizens, who wish to resettle abroad. For many years, there have existed various schemes. Until 1988, for example, the old supplementary benefit system provided the full cost of fares for applicants and their dependents who wished to resettle abroad to do so. From August 1984, this scheme was in fact restricted so that only British citizens were entitled, and the maximum allowed per person was 2 years' worth of benefit. According to information provided in a parliamentary answer, between 1972 and 1986, some 1,208 people were assisted under this system at a total cost of £216,654. Since 1988, when supplementary benefit was abolished and replaced by the social fund, no equivalent provision has been available. Since 1971, however, there has also been very limited provision available under the Immigration Act of that year. I refer to the scheme run on behalf of the government by International Social Services and located in Brixton. I wonder why the government chose this particular location. This scheme provides for those who are not British citizens to obtain the cost of fares for themselves and their families, plus a small amount for the transportation of their effects. In total, between 1971 and 1995, some 2,545 people took advantage of this scheme, the overwhelming majority of them to return to the Caribbean region. The level of interest in this scheme is, however, far higher, with the number of initial inquiries reaching more than 900 in one particular year. I know from my own constituency casework that many of those who inquire are turned down because they are British citizens, and there is thus clearly a gap in provision. In addition to these schemes, there are others at the European level run by the International Organization for Migration, or the IOM. This organization facilitates return to the country of origin. The IOM's excellent program for the return and reintegration of qualified African nationals began in 1983, and more than 1,250 people have been assisted, with about a half of them coming from the United Kingdom. The project is now paid for by the European Union, and thus in part by the British government, who support the project. The IOM has a major center located in London. Phase 3 of the project began in January 1995. It will assist a further 999 professionals to return to targeted jobs in targeted countries or regions. It will pay their travel costs, the cost of professional equipment, and various reintegration allowances. Interestingly, the IOM also ran a program last year to assist 40 professionals to return to Jamaica, and 11 places were filled by UK applicants. A larger scheme with 50 places is likely to be run in 1996, and it is hoped to expand the scheme to the whole of the Caribbean in due course. I repeat that the government fully supports this scheme. I have been told today by the coordinator of the IOM, and I quote, this is what she said. I quote, this program has aroused a great deal of interest, and from our conversations with applicants, we know that there are many who wish to return to Jamaica. She goes on to say, we fully support your initiative, meaning my initiative, in raising this issue, and we would be prepared to run a larger return program if funding was available. Now, Madam Deputy Speaker, it is now time, I believe, for there to be a thorough review of existing provision in this area and for a more realistic scheme to facilitate resettlement. It is my considered view that this would be in the interests of Britain, in the interests of the Caribbean, and most certainly in the interests of those who wish to resettle. There are, in other words, coinciding interests that would make such a scheme a logical development. I also believe that a suitable scheme could be developed at no additional cost to the public purse. There is no doubt that there is increased interest in resettlement. People have already left for the Caribbean in considerable numbers. There is a sizable drift back to the region of thousands of people. The Jamaican government estimates that some 2,000 people returned from the UK to Jamaica in 1994. Barbados, Dominica, Antigua, and Guyana are also popular destinations. For returning residents. Organizations have been set up in Britain to assist those wishing to return, such as the Organization of Returning Jamaicans and Associates, and it is flourishing. And it is interesting that the person who heads up that organization, Mark LeBan, said to me only yesterday that the management committee for ORAJ, as it is called, is made up of Jamaican people aged between 30 and 45. So that this is not a situation whereby only elderly people wish to return. Now, Madam Deputy Speaker, those who have already resettled, including both those originally born in the region as well as those born in Britain. However, they are the more prosperous, the retired, or professionals with marketable skills, also entrepreneurs who can afford the travel and resettlement costs involved. There are many others who would dearly wish to resettle, but who do not have the means to do so. I have had huge numbers of letters from such people, from all over the country, including my own constituents, who are desperately seeking help to return home. Many letters come too from those in the caring professions seeking my help for their clients in this regard. They include the elderly, many of whom came here in the 1950s and 60s at the specific request of the British government and never intended to remain here for long. However, the streets of Britain turned out not to be paved with gold, and they were never in a position to return. There are others who are chronically ill and never likely to work again in Britain, who would prefer to return home to the Caribbean. Like the retired, they are frequently trapped by a benefit system which would cut them off from the benefits which they have earned if they were to go back. I have one constituent, for example, who is now retired and who longs to return to the Caribbean. If she did so, however, her state pension would be frozen at its current level, and all benefits for her dependent disabled daughter would be curtailed because they are only payable in Britain. Does anyone give a hoot, really, whether in a case of this kind, that young lady's benefit is paid here in Britain or in the Caribbean. The social security system is similarly inflexible so far as the long-term unemployed are concerned. I include here many single parents. These are people who know that they could advance themselves by returning to the Caribbean. However, they would find it hard to even raise the fare and would lose all benefits immediately if they left the United Kingdom. Given the high proportion of unemployed black workers who are long-term unemployed, some 60% as opposed to 44% in the white population, it makes little sense for the social security system to close off the option of return. It would not be so outrageous for such people, properly supervised, to be allowed benefit equivalent sums for a few months to enable them to explore this option. Far higher sums are already spent on make-work schemes here in Britain. Finally, there is another group which frequently approaches me. This comprises those who are in work, often skilled or professional people, who would like, at least for a period of time, to use their skills to assist in the development of countries with which they have connections, countries such as the Caribbean, with a view to resettlement. At present, there is no structure to channel the aspirations of this group, and there are many practical and financial obstacles. As I have already said, the Caribbean and possibly other interested countries would welcome a resettlement program. The region has for many years now been the subject of a brain drain in which its brightest and its best sons and daughters have migrated mostly to Britain, the United States, or Canada. The absence of these groups has a destabilizing effect on those countries and is now a major obstacle to economic development in the region. There are several Caribbean governments, including Guyana, Jamaica, and Barbados, which are encouraging people to return by making special arrangements to assist returnees. They have set up units within their foreign ministries to assist the smooth return of their citizens. They have also made tax changes favorable to returning residents and issued calls for nationals to return to those countries. They know there are major economic spin-offs resulting from resettlement. As I have said, a suitable scheme to assist in resettlement could be developed if there were the will to do so. Clearly, it would need to be the subject of detailed work, but it is possible to state the principles upon which such a scheme would be organized. Firstly, any scheme would of course be entirely voluntary, and there can be no question of compulsion or of rescinding anyone's British citizenship. Secondly, it must be a responsible scheme, properly managed on a case-by-case basis, to ensure that those who return do so with the best possible advice and support. Thirdly, the scheme must be adequate, which will ensure that those who take advantage of it are properly provided for. I personally would not support any scheme which leaves people worse off than they are in the UK in terms of living standards, healthcare, housing in particular. Fourthly, the ultimate veto over eligibility for the scheme must rest with the designation countries themselves. In fact, they could well be given the responsibility for administering the scheme. I have had discussions with most of those governments, and they are willing to do so. Finally, the scheme would have to be developed in full consultation with the black community here, in particular the Caribbean community here, and the designation countries. The advantages to Britain of such a scheme would be numerous. First of all, it is not generally in the interest of any country to have a substantial number of people in its midst who honestly do not want to be in that country. Secondly, even with the most generous scheme, there would be substantial financial advantages. Those who approach me are all too often those who are most dependent on social benefits, health and welfare services, and indeed are most likely to be subsidized in various ways for their housing costs. They are also likely to be tenants of local authority housing. It would not take too much imagination to calculate a social benefits equivalent sum for a given number of people each year, which could be used as the basis for a budget for a resettlement scheme. Given the lower costs of living in the Caribbean, even after weekly benefit equivalent payments, there would be substantial sums available for investment in housing, social care, and health insurance. There are many variations possible. The existing IOM scheme could well be developed substantially to cater for more of those in work who wish to return. If the costs of this part of the scheme were to come from the existing ODA budget, this would not be a bad thing. It would certainly be a more effective means of helping the countries concerned than the current practice of sending down highly paid consultants to perform key jobs in those countries in the region. Finally, an enhanced resettlement program would be in the interests of Britain, not least because it would comprise huge damage which Britain has inflicted on the Caribbean both now and in the past. It is true to say that having created and exploited those countries through slavery and colonization, Britain is now abandoning them now that its economic interests lie elsewhere. Having stolen so much, it would be more than fitting at this time in history for Britain to at least facilitate the return of those who wish to go back to those countries. Some have said that even to mention this matter is to cause damage to race relations in this country, and to argue for a resettlement scheme is to give in to racism. I have even been accused of adopting the agenda of fascists and racists. Even the Secretary of State for Home Affairs told me recently that he feared that an enhanced resettlement scheme would make black people feel unwelcome here. I find that very rich indeed, coming from someone who has set back race relations by at least 20 years in the relatively short time that he has been in office. I am not convinced by these arguments. This is about creating positive choices for black people, setting our own agenda for once, and about remembering where we came from. Some black people will want to stay in Britain, and the fight for racial equality will continue. I myself will continue to play my part in that struggle. It is true that some want to leave because they are sick and tired of the racism they face in this country. They are fed up with fighting racism, and I see no reason why they should be forced to do so. There are others, however, who quite honestly do not feel at home in Britain, and others who despair of the predominant values and culture of this society and fear for their children growing up in such a climate. Then there are others who simply wish to return to live with their families. And of course, this feeling is the more common nowadays because of the absurdity of current immigration rules, which keep families apart. Yeah. And I wish the minister would address this particular point when he tries to sum up at the end of this debate. This House has no right to deny those people a choice about their future. And against the background of all that has been done to black people historically and is happening to black people at the present moment. Madam Deputy Speaker, we know of the tragic events that happened just not a week ago in Brixton, where as a result of the tragic death, once again, the second in 6 months, of a black young person at the hands of the police in Brixton, where, as I understand it, the young man was cornered in a park. He had a knife. He threw it away. The police then descended on that young person and beat him very badly indeed. This was witnessed by several people, and I understand the PCA is now investigating it. Now, that was a tragic event by any stretch of the imagination. It is similar to what happened to Rodney King. And I'm sure the minister and some of the police officers around would have said that it is terrible what happened to Rodney King. It is my understanding, and there are witnesses who will come forward eventually to prove it, that this is precisely what happened to young Wayne Douglas in Brixton. And what concerns a number of people is that far from the police learning from their mistakes in the past, they refuse to do so. What they should have done is that they should have automatically suspended the officers concerned on full pay and had an inquiry immediately into the situation. I also have to say that the media played their part in this notorious affair, because the media should have given some prominence to yet another death at the hands of the same police force within 6 months. And by this use of side-handled batons. You know, Madam Deputy Speaker, these two young black males are the first people to die as a result of the introduction of the side-handled batons, which were imported from the United States, the same batons that killed Rodney King. And you know, Madam Deputy Speaker, we have heard nobody mention anything about this at all. I tried to ask a question of the Home Secretary on the occasion of the first death, and he gave me an answer to the effect that it cost too much to actually find out how many people had died as a result of the introduction of the long-handled batons. We now know, and I will tell this House, that two young black men have died as a result of these side-handled batons, and they are the first to die. I think that in itself should require some statement from the Home Secretary, and maybe tonight the minister in this debate can address that particular point, but I doubt whether he will, because of course the minister himself is involved as a part of the race car that is currently being played by the government in relation to all these matters. Most certainly.
I mean, on that point, I'm grateful to my honourable friend for giving way. Wouldn't he agree that one of the most deplorable aspects of events in Brixton is far from the mainstream media looking at issues like the deaths in custody or the use of long-handled batons, they have sought scapegoats like Rudy Narayan or the Voice newspaper or the Caribbean Times newspaper. The ethnic press is being held up by the mainstream press for simply printing the facts when the mainstream press wouldn't. Wouldn't it be more appropriate if those same papers exposed some of the issues you've been talking about in relation to police brutality?
I'm indebted to my honourable friend, the member for Hackney North and Stoke Newington, for that intervention, because it was a point that I had missed, and I'm glad that she reminded me of it, because she, of course, is absolutely right. Because far from looking for the culprits who caused this situation to occur, they have looked for a whole number of scapegoats, including Rudy Narayan, who represents no one except himself, who is not a voice that people follow in Brixton, and poor Rudy is probably going to end up in the courts and so on and be charged for inciting riots when, if the truth were known, Rudy couldn't incite himself to riot on any occasion. And I think that this kind of scapegoating, this situation where the government and their cohorts are seeking to scapegoat people who are just trying to bring to the attention of the public a very serious situation within the black community, I think is deplorable. Now, Madam Deputy Speaker, as I was saying, the House has no right to deny those people a choice about their future. And against the background that all has been done to black people historically and is happening currently, this House owes it to them to allow them to exercise that choice. I speak on behalf of a very large number of people in Britain in raising this matter tonight, and I hope that the minister will carefully consider what I have said and agree that at the very least to commission a study of how the current very limited arrangements for resettlement could be suitably expanded. Madam Deputy Speaker, I will end my remarks there, and I will just say that I had a meeting with the Home Secretary and the minister on this very point, and the Home Secretary felt that he couldn't support the scheme because, to put it in his words, that if he were to do so, it might encourage elements to believe that black people are not welcome in this country. The Home Secretary went on to say that black people are very welcome here. They are worthy people. They have made a substantial contribution to Britain. This was the first time that I've heard this particular Home Secretary make such remarks. I am very pleased, and I'm indebted indeed that the Home Secretary found it necessary to make those remarks. I wish he would say so more often, because most certainly, I'll give it to my honourable friend.
I'm grateful to my honourable friend. But I,
yeah. The honourable lady gets launched. Could I remind her that she is addressing me?
Yes, of course. I'm grateful to my honourable friend. Would my honourable friend agree that welcome though it is to give the Home Secretary say these positive things about race relations, it comes ill from somebody who is promoting the current asylum and immigration legislation, which is a profoundly racist set of legislation, which will tend to criminalise not just immigrants and asylum seekers, but criminalise black ethnic people as a whole, particularly in relation to its provisions for passport checks on employees. And some might, I would not, but some might, accuse the Home Secretary of hypocrisy in this regard.
Yes, again, my honourable friend is right on the mark. She is absolutely correct. Just today, of course, I was, and the minister himself is in the, and the honourable member for Hackney North and Stoke Newington. We were all in the committee, the first sitting of the committee, which will look at the Immigration and Asylum Bill. And quite frankly, I think that anyone who is who hasn't been nobbled by the Home Secretary and his people will see, any independent observer will look at this bill and say that this bill that has been put forward has clear racist motivations and motives. And the Immigration and Asylum Bill, in fact.
Sorry to interrupt the Honourable Gentleman, but the general burden of his adjournment debate is about people leaving this country, not coming to it. And I think he ought to return to that.
Of course, I'm always willing to take guidance from the Speaker. But of course, for some people to get, for some people to leave, they have to come into the country as well. So that I'm concerned with both people coming in and going out. You can't do one without the other. But I accept the point that the Madam Deputy Speaker has made. And the reason why I mention this bill is because, of course, this bill has a clear bearing on black and minority ethnic communities here. Because the Home Secretary will require employers to ask people to provide documents and so on in order to establish that they have a right to be in this country. And we know from experience that the people who will be asked will be black people. It happens all the time. It happens when black people go to Europe and go in a group of school children. And when the immigration officers in France and in Germany and in Belgium allow all the white children to go through, they stop the black kids and ask for special, you know, and the black kids have to produce or to explain, in effect, why they are able to walk through like everyone else. You know, the minister might well poo-poo this, but if he poo-poos this, he shows that he is totally ignorant about the effects of his and the European Union's policies on black people who are here, who are British citizens. And if he's going to adopt this attitude of just saying that, oh, it's a load of nonsense, everything is rosy in Britain, and then I think that it exposes his own personal racism in relation to this matter. So I'm going to listen with clearly to what he has to say, because this is a reasoned argument that has been put forward. And he has a right, and I want him to address the points made.
Order. I think perhaps the Honourable Gentleman didn't mean it, but he rather gave the impression that he was accusing another Honourable Member of racism, and that would definitely be unparliamentary.
Well, Madam Deputy Speaker, I would withdraw any such remarks. Of course, the Minister isn't racist. He might act as if he's a racist, but I know that he isn't. And that is on that basis I will withdraw the remark and give it to my honourable friend.
The honourable gentleman. And I think the whole House is following his arguments very carefully indeed. Does he not agree that even at this late stage, bearing in mind all the matters that have been raised, today's lobby of the asylum bill, which took place in this House today, Madam Deputy Speaker, and the points raised by the Honourable Gentleman in this very important adjournment debate, is that even at this very late stage, the government could well refer the whole committee to a special standing committee where all the points should be raised?
I'm sorry, but this is going way beyond the subject of the adjournment debate, and I would ask the Honourable Gentleman on the front bench not to lead his Honourable friend astray in that way. Mr. Grant.
Thank you very much, Madam Deputy Speaker, for bringing us back on the rails, so to speak. I have to say that we will, of course, be fighting the Immigration and Asylum Bill and the Asylum Bill thoroughly. We will be thoroughly fighting it in the committee. And if the minister thinks he's in for an easy ride, he'd better think again, because there's going to be substantial opposition both inside and outside of that committee. In conclusion, Madam Deputy Speaker, may I say that what we're talking about is a situation where people feel, for various reasons as I have outlined, that there is a need for them to be given an option of being able to return to the Caribbean. I've also stated that the Caribbean governments would welcome a scheme that encourages people to return. In fact, I was told by the President of Guyana only recently that he wrote to the Prime Minister and asked him to let him have his unemployed skilled workers so that because he has plenty of work for them in Guyana. And I understand that the reply from the Prime Minister was that because of the social security regulations, it wouldn't be possible for him to do so. What I'm saying is that these regulations, I believe, could be changed and that schemes could be developed, imaginative schemes, schemes that would give people hope, schemes that would allow young people, people who are graduated, who have graduated, or people who are skilled and qualified in certain areas, who feel that there's a glass ceiling through which they cannot break, that those people could be given an opportunity of a life or part of a life in another area of the world, which can benefit that area and also benefit themselves. I think that I have also proven this evening that there are already two schemes running, one run by the government itself, which has inculcated in that scheme the principles of return from this country to the Caribbean and other countries in the world. The other scheme is run by the International Organization of Migration, which is based and has a center based right here in Queen Anne's Gate in London. And this is a scheme that is supported by the government, and it is a scheme that the government finances, so that there are no reasons why the government should not extend these currently existing schemes for along the lines that I have suggested. And finally, can I say that to make a statement as to why the British taxpayer should pay for this, may I remind him that his government in the 50s and the 60s sent down people to the Caribbean, paid British used British taxpayers' money to recruit bus drivers, people who worked on London transport in the hospitals, nurses and other people, sent people down. The Minister of Labour at that time was Mr. Enoch Powell, who I'm sure the Honourable Gentleman has heard of. And they sent people down and paid for people to come here. What I'm saying is that now some of those people wish to return for various reasons. They might not have the wherewithal to do so, and we're suggesting that the British government should use some taxpayers' money in order to do that. And I'm also suggesting, Madam Deputy Speaker, that if the British government were to work such a scheme, that scheme would actually work in, would mean savings to the Treasury, and for that reason alone, the Minister should support it.
Mr. Timothy Kirk.
Madam Deputy Speaker, I very much regret the fact that the Honourable Gentleman has again decided to raise the question of voluntary repatriation. I've noted his contribution this evening and the contributions that came from the Labour front bench and the members for Leicester East and Hackney North. The only saving grace of this debate this evening is that it gives me the opportunity to restate the government's total opposition to any scheme which actively encourages people who are lawfully settled here to return to their country of origin. Nobody who has a legal right to live in this country should be under any pressure to leave. We on this side of the House are not in the business of advocating that our own citizens emigrate to the country where their parents, grandparents, or ancestors were born. And I deeply resent the remarks of the Honourable Gentleman about my Right Honourable and learned friend, the Home Secretary, who has done so much to work for improved good race relations. And regardless of what the Honourable Member is saying from a sedentary position, Britain has greatly improved race relations, and I am proud of that fact, and I want to see it continue myself. I'm also saddened at the Honourable Gentleman's determination to try and use tonight's debate to provide his own conclusions about the recent disturbances in Brixton before an inquiry is completed. The government condemns what it sees as a violent minority who attack police officers and property, and who, in my view, attempt to besmirch the good name of the vast majority of the people of Brixton who are decent, caring, and law-abiding citizens and want to remain that way. I firmly believe that any measure designed to encourage repatriation or emigration by members of the ethnic community would do untold damage to race relations. It is the persistent taunt of thugs and racists that black or Asian people should go home. For the government to set up a scheme actively promoting repatriation or emigration of ethnic minorities as a good thing would be to endorse the racist, odious views. I do not believe that the House would want that. The government is committed to creating a fair and integrated society. We are working hard to reduce racial discrimination. The Honourable Member says rubbish. I would repeat, we are working hard to reduce racial discrimination, to tackle racial violence, and to ensure that everyone, irrespective of the colour of their skin, enjoys the same opportunities in this country. Good race relations need to be worked at constantly. All of us know that, including, I am sure, the Honourable Gentleman and his Honourable friends. Any government-sponsored measure which implied to ethnic minorities that they were unwelcome could only have a detrimental effect on race relations. There is absolutely no place for such proposals in our work. I know that the Honourable Member for Tottenham has a number of proposals. He raised them with the Home Secretary in my presence on the 6th of December last. As he has said, the Home Secretary was certainly not persuaded that the Honourable Gentleman's proposals deserved further consideration. He does not intend to change the present arrangements. As the Honourable Gentleman has said, the government does fund a small humanitarian scheme under which people with few savings, and who, as he has said, are not British citizens, can be given basic financial assistance to return overseas where it is in their best interest to do so and they wish to go. This assistance is limited to the travel fare and the cost of transporting a small number of personal possessions. Around 60 people a year benefit from this scheme. They are mainly elderly people, often without close family ties here, and the majority of them return to Jamaica. The important point, Madam Deputy Speaker, is that only those with very low savings of less than £3,000 are eligible for full assistance. The scheme is low-key, and the assistance is limited. And this, of course, is deliberate. The scheme does not set out to persuade people to leave Britain. It seeks to help those whose hearts are set on returning home, where they have satisfactory future arrangements and the only significant obstacle is the cost of the travel arrangements. We do not see any reason to change these arrangements, and we have recently agreed to extend the current scheme for a further 5 years. But I will now turn to some of the suggestions that the Honourable Member for Tottenham has made. He has said that he thinks that British citizens should be eligible for help. Our objection to this is straightforward. We do not think that it is appropriate for the government to pay for the removal of British citizens to a foreign country. There would, in any event, be numerous practical problems in administering such a scheme, which would be wide open to abuse and attract all sorts of opportunists to apply. Effective administration would be difficult and expensive, and the government can see no good purpose in pursuing such ideas further. Another of the Honourable Member's ideas is that young, unemployed people of Afro-Caribbean descent, but born here in the UK, should be encouraged to emigrate to Africa and the Caribbean. He appears seriously to think that the government should pay for such young people to leave our country. Well, I'll tell the Honourable Member, we value our young people in this country. Yes, he can laugh. We value our young people in this country. And I have to say that I find his idea not only outlandish, but actually offensive. I cannot believe that sending young people to a country that they probably have little or no experience of would help them in the least. We take the problem of unemployed people in this country seriously, and that's why we are committed to having a dynamic economy in which jobs are created for them, not destroyed. The party opposite would destroy jobs, as we all know by their schemes and ideas. The way to help unemployed young people is to train them and to educate them so they can find a job, and this we are trying to do more and more. Not to send them back to the country from which their ancestors came. A government-funded emigration program is emphatically not the answer.
Yeah, the Minister says fine words about how the government is wanting to do stuff about unemployment. Can I say to the Minister that in Tottenham, amongst black young people, unemployment is 65%, and this is young people aged between 15 and 25 years. Could he tell me what his government is doing to get those people jobs?
The Honourable Member is well aware of the schemes which the government is employing to try and give jobs to young people and provide training for them. He's well aware of it because there are schemes operating in his own area which he surely is aware of. And frankly, you know, for him not to give any credit whatsoever to the people that are involved working on this basis, some of them are paid directly by the government, some of them are actually indirectly paid, and some of them are voluntary workers. But he knows very well of the number of schemes, and I'd be delighted to discuss that further with him at some other point. But the government is concerned to see that young people have a job in this country and not be encouraged to leave this country and go elsewhere. In any event, what would the receiving country think of us if we were seeking to export young people in that way? We have no information to suggest that they would be keen on that. And, well, the Honourable Member says he has. We have no evidence of that. I'd be extremely surprised if they were so keen as he suggests. The BBC Newsnight coverage of this issue, Madam Deputy Speaker, on the 6th of December, made a helpful contribution towards rational debate. What I found particularly striking was the stories of old people who had visited their country of origin in the West Indies after decades away, and their bewilderment at how much things and they themselves had changed. Many saw their lives clearly now firmly based in Britain. They did not want to return. And if this is the case for people of their generation who were born abroad, how much more true would it be for people born in the UK who have British attitudes and presumptions about life? Life in the West Indies could come as a cultural shock, and Madam Deputy Speaker, not inevitably a pleasant one for them. The Honourable Member has referred in his speech to a number of other schemes which involve financial assistance with the travel and other costs of movements between one country and another. I acknowledge the presence of those schemes. There is, for instance, a European scheme under the Lome Convention, to which I think he alluded, that encourages, as a form of overseas aid to Jamaica, young Jamaican professionals to take up posts which would otherwise be filled by foreign experts. This scheme aims to boost the Jamaican economy. Similarly, the International Organization for Migration assists refugee and asylum seeker movements, usually under the auspices of the UNHCR. But I must emphasize again the limited nature of such schemes and my belief and the government's belief that they should and must remain limited. As my right honourable and learned friend told the honourable member for Tottenham when we met him on the 6th of December, the government is totally opposed to encouraging voluntary repatriation, let alone emigration. To do so, as I say, will send out all the wrong messages to the ethnic minority communities, and worse still, would play into the hands of racists. And this is well recognised by many influential sections within those communities, and I'm pleased that they have not been slow to criticise the honourable member for doing so. I emphasise that the government's view is that everybody in Britain, regardless of race or creed, should have a fair chance. The government does not think that there should be measures that discriminate between races, such as the honourable member's suggestions seem to. I know the honourable member has long been interested in this subject. However, I simply do not agree that the extension to the current very limited arrangements he has in mind would either provide a solution to race relations problems or necessarily help the individuals with whom he says he is concerned. The way to improve race relations is for the positive participation by all ethnic minority groups in British society, so that they are not socially excluded or disadvantaged in any aspect of life here. This country is greatly strengthened by the different ethnic groups which make up our population. We have all gained from their commitment to Britain's success in every field, economic, social, artistic, and sporting. I totally reject the suggestion that as a government we should actively encourage members of those communities to leave this country because they would be better off elsewhere.
I'm grateful to the Minister. I do not, as my friend is aware, support his scheme for repatriation in the shape that he puts it forward. But I think what the Minister is failing to understand is that my honourable friend's proposals have struck a tremendous chord in the black community. And to the extent that they have struck a chord, it is a symptom of the deep alienation, the deep disaffection, and the deep unhappiness that many black people of all ages feel about their life in this country. And I've listened very carefully to the Minister, but much of what he's saying reeks of hypocrisy, in my view. And what is more, much of what he's saying completely fails to understand the reality of life for many black people in this country.
Well, the Honourable Lady is entitled to that point of view. And certainly when she says that the suggestions of the Honourable Member have struck a chord, I can tell her that the Honourable Member's suggestions have also been received with great unhappiness in quite a lot of sections of ethnic minority communities in this country. And I believe that the government's view about this is the one which reflects the majority views, and also, it seems to me to reflect a view that race relations are important to us as a government and to the country as a whole. Well, I'll let you once more.
I thank the Minister for giving me on this particular point, and I'm aware that a group of people representing the Asian community and one or two people from the West Indian community came to see the Home Secretary recently. And I want to say to the Minister that the West Indian Standing Conference has voted almost to a person after I put my scheme to them to support my scheme. And I also want to say to him that my scheme has nothing to do with the Indian subcontinent. It's got nothing to do with India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka. It's about the Caribbean. So I wonder if he could tell me which Caribbean groups have supported the government against what I've been saying.
No, Madam Deputy Speaker, I'm not going to get into a contest this evening with the Honourable Member as to groups that support or do not support his proposals. I mean, he has not been able to persuade
as far as I know, although I'm in some doubt now, his own front bench in the Labour Party about these ideas. Though the presence here tonight of the front bench spokesman for the inner cities seemed to me to indicate some support from the Labour Party for his ideas. I would just like to repeat once more that the government does not support his ideas and has no intention whatsoever of doing so. I have no idea, as I say, whether they might become Labour Party policy. He will have to discuss that with his own front bench again. But tonight, Madam Deputy Speaker, I invite the Honourable Member to join with me in pursuing policies which promote good race relations, rather than the policies that he has put forward, which in my view could and might put them in jeopardy.
The question is that this House do now adjourn. As many as of that opinion say aye.
Aye.
The contrary, no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Order. Order.